Today is February 3rd, and we're at Sheretz Israel on Friday morning, learning Tractate Baba Kama, Chapter 2, Mishnah 5, and I'm going to read the Mishnah. It looks like a long Mishnah. We will get through it. So it goes like this. I'm in the Hebrew, of course. Everyone following in the Mishnah?
Mm-hmm. On 5, is that what you said? Mm-hmm.
Chapter 2, Mishnah 5. Begins with the following words. Shur hamazik birshut hanizak ketzad, which is pretty straightforward. Shur hamazik means, of course, the damaging shur, the damaging ox. Birshut hanizak, right, in the domain of the nizak, the person who got damaged. Ketzad, how so? What are the details? What are the laws of such a case? And the minute we read those words that I just read, we actually recognize them. Because those exact same words were found in a previous Mishnah not too long ago. So if we hold a finger where we are right now and go back to a previous Mishnah, I know it's complicated with the photostats, it's going to be at the end of chapter 1. If you go back to the end of chapter 1, which was not too long ago, the last Mishnah of chapter 1 is Mishnah 4.
Five classes.
Okay, I have it.
Yeah, so it's going to be that very phrase, Shur Hamazik Birshut Hanizak, appeared word for word in this previous Mishnah, the end of chapter 1. And that might remind us of what's going on. We have said more than once that last Mishnah at the end of chapter 1 is actually a table of contents that lists, if you remember, it lists 5 tamim and 5 muadim, 5 cases of damage in which it's considered to be a tam that damaged, right, a tame animal, which means that it only pays half damage, and 5 cases in which you have to pay full damage, which is considered to be mu'ad, a forewarned animal. Mm-hmm. And that Mishnah listed all 10 cases, 5 and 5. Mm-hmm. And then the next chapter, chapter 2, went back and dealt with every single category mentioned there in that Mishnah and gave further details. That's what all of chapter 2 is. So when we get in chapter 2 today, chapter 2, Mishnah 5, the Mishnah beginning with those 4 words, Shur Hamazik Birshut Hanizak, Ketzad, how so? It's just like other Mishnah we've had in the same chapter, quoting a phrase from the last Mishnah of chapter 1 and saying, Ketzad, how is it so? Give me the details. So the structure is pretty straightforward. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So now back to our Mishnah of today. It says as follows, Ketzad, right? I'm reading it from the beginning. Shur hamazik birshut hanizak ketzad. The ox that damages in the domain of the damage E, Ketzad, how so? And it says the following, Nagach, Nagaf, Nashach, Ravatz, Ba'at. And if I count correctly on my fingers, that's 5 categories. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just translate them. Nagach, right, that is, it gored. Nagaf, that means that it pushed with its body. Nashach means it bit. Ravatz means that it lied down on something. And Ba'at means it kicked. And it just so happens they're all on the board. 4 of the 5 are. Right, the pushing, biting, lying down, and kicking is there. We just need the first one. The top one.
Goring.
Which is the goring.
It's Nagach. Gord is Nagach.
Yeah. So these are the 5 categories that fall under the rubric of Shur Hamazik, the damaging ox. Now, even before we read on the rest of the sentence, we can look at those 5 categories. You can look at them in Hebrew, look at them in English, it doesn't matter. Look at them on the board, look at them in the translation. And we all know in this room, those of us who've been here for a few weeks, that those 5 categories really can be divided into 4 and 1. In other words, 4 of these are similar, and one of them is a little bit different.
Right.
The lying down is a different one.
No.
Pushing.
No.
Biting.
No.
Gore.
What did you say?
Gore.
The goring is the different one.
Oh. Where's goring?
The goring, right? Oh. It's goring, and it happens to be that the goring is in red, and the other four are in purple.
I didn't see the goring.
Oh, you didn't see it. Well, where's the eraser to make it a little bit clearer here?
Now, so remind us, why is goring the different one?
To remind you why goring is different, because to use the English translation in a kind of whimsical way, the goring is the father, and the pushing, biting, lying down, and kicking are the descendants. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
In Hebrew, Av and Toladah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Goring is the one mentioned in the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And then the rabbis say that goring is not just literally goring, it's that type of damage. You have to figure out what its salient characteristics are. Once you know its salient characteristics, you can extrapolate to other types of damage will be in the same category. So we had said, looking in the Torah, that goring is, what's the definition of goring?
It's forewarned, something that's, aggressive.
It's aggressive.
It's aggressive, right? It's out of the ordinary aggressive behavior.
So,
and therefore, it's not forewarned, usually, right?
Mm-hmm.
The normal goring ox only has to pay how much?
Half.
As opposed to other types of damage that have to pay full. Because you don't expect an ox to gore, usually. But then the rabbi said, so any other behavior of an ox that is aggressive and unexpected also is the same category. Like pushing. Oxen don't usually push. They push if they get angry, if they're provoked. Same thing with biting. Right? Biting is not a category of shame. It's not eating. Eating is normal, but biting is not normal. Lying down, if suddenly there's a little pot or jug on the floor and the ox gets angry, so he lies down on it and he breaks it. Or kicking, certainly out of the ordinary. See, these are all the four toledot, the four descendants, the four subcategories of the Av, of the father, of the principal, which is goring. And just to repeat again, we know that goring, Nigiha, is one of the Avot Nizikin of the Torah, one of the categories of damage in the Torah, and the classical goring is in which reshut? That is to say, the goring mentioned in the Torah is in which reshut, which domain?
Private.
Public.
Public. Right. So the Torah talks about goring in the public domain. That's the classic case. Goring in the public domain. And in this classic case, as Moshe said just a minute ago, you pay chatzi nezek, half damage, because it's unexpected, and the owners would not have been are not forewarned to look out for such a thing. It usually doesn't happen. You don't have to muzzle your oxen or shoot their beam, because oxen usually don't, right? Don't bite, and they don't gore. So goring in the public domain is half damage. That's a classic case. Now, the question is, what happens in a non-classical case, which is, what happens when an ox gores in the private domain? The Torah didn't talk about that. So I don't know what the law is. If my ox gets into your backyard and sees there your kitten and gores it, or bites it, or pushes it, or lies down it, and does damage, so what's the law? Is it just like it was in the public domain, chatzi nezek, or is it different? If it would be different in the private domain, would it be more or less?
More.
Because it's trespassing, right?
Yeah.
So this question, what is the status of goring and the four toledot of goring in the private domain, reshut hanizak? That question is a machloket, is an argument, is a disagreement among the rabbis. And we started bringing this up when we saw that last Mishnah of the first chapter a few weeks ago.
Because in that last Mishnah of the first chapter, the case of goring in the private domain is brought up, and an opinion is offered of how much it has to pay. Let's go back to that and look. Again, it's either half or it's either full. Goring in the private domain. Is it like the classical case of Rishut HaRabim, half damage, or is it worse? Is it more serious? So if we hold our fingers where we are right now and go back to that last Mishnah of the previous chapter, chapter 1, Mishnah 4, if we go back there, anyone needs to be reminded of the, what place it's on? What page?
Yeah, page 30, this would be
31? Mishnah 4.
Okay. Mishnah 4 is on page 26 and 27.
Okay.
27.
Yeah, five classes.
Five classes, yeah.
So it says five classes of Tam and five classes of Muad. And then it lists the five classes of Tam. Mm-hmm. And they are what we have on the board. Right? The four Toladot and the one of goring, and then it says after those five that are the tamim, the tame that only pay half damage, it says shein muedit, the tooth is forewarned. Do you see that?
Yeah, the tooth of an animal.
It's on page 28, is it?
27. Second to last line.
Okay, 27, second to last line.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so Caroline, do you see the place?
No. I mean, I see number 4, but I don't know where
at the bottom.
It's at the bottom of page 27.
Yeah.
Okay.
The line.
A domestic animal is not considered noxious with reference to goring, pushing, biting, lying down, or kicking.
Those are the five tamim.
And that's the tooth of an animal.
The tooth is right. Okay, the tooth. So that's a hashem that the tooth is forewarned. So we already have there in this Mishnah five tamim. It lists the five tamim that pay half damage. You just read them, Carol Ann. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing it says, Ashen Muedit, the tooth is forewarned. So that's the beginning of the list of the five Muadim. The first Muad is Shein. And was just read by Mo, Hashen Muedit Lechol Et Haru'ila. The tooth is forewarned to eat that which is fitting for it. And then it says, Haregel Muedit. The foot is forewarned to break while it's walking, right? That's the second forewarned. The third one is Shur HaMuad, the forewarned ox, which means an ox that gores three times. And then after that, it's considered to be forewarned. And now, what are the next four words? Vishur HaMazik Birshut HaNizak. The ox that damages in the domain of the damagee. Now that is a description of Karen in the Rishut and Nizak, Karen in the and horn, goring in the domain of the damagee, and it's listed in the list of Muadim.
Well, the problem, I think, is that the English translation is god-awful there.
So tell me what the English translation is.
The leg of the foot is noxious with regard to breaking down in its way as it walks so long. It says nothing about
that. No. Where are you? Okay, that's the leg.
Yeah.
That's in the list of Muadim.
Yeah.
And then the noxious ox. And then the ox committing damage in the private domain of the injured party.
Okay.
So the ox committing damage in the private domain of the injured party, that's in the list of Muadim, of those that pay full damage. So in other words, what we just read, that in the Mishnah that we're reading right now, the last Mishnah of the first chapter, the goring ox in the private domain is considered to be in the list of Muadim, in other words, it pays full damage. And that's not written in the Torah. That's an extrapolation. Let me just write this on the board.
we said that goring in the public domain, half damage, right? That's what the Torah says. And now we just read that in chapter 1, Mishnah 4, it says that goring in the private domain pays full. I'm just write that down. Goring in the private domain pays full. And that again is not written in the Torah. That's a rabbinic extrapolation that says the leniency that a goring ox in the public domain pays half. That's because the public domain is made for oxen, and it's not expected they gore. If they gore, the owner's not fully responsible, and that's what they have. But if the owner's ox got into someone else's property and gored there, the owner's responsible. He shouldn't have let his ox wander off. Has to pay there for full damage. But in today's Mishnah, we're going to see that there's a disagreement over that. There's a machloket. So that brings us back to today's Mishnah, and we will no longer be turning the page. Now we're going to stay in today's Mishnah. Remember that today's Mishnah is the fifth Mishnah of the second chapter. The fifth Mishnah, back to the, where is it? Just tell everyone again the page, Bruce.
31.
Well, my page numbers are different.
Oh, your page numbers are different. Oh, no.
No, but
I mean, so you can't tell everyone where they are?
I can't.
I have a book. So
I have
none
a,
of us have a book. So.
No, you see here? Look how mine are numbered.
Oh, goodness. This
is the Reader's Digest
version. Okay. So anyway, we're back to the fifth Mishnah of the second chapter, and we're reading it again from the beginning. Shur Hamazik Birshut HaNizak. The ox that damages in the domain of the damagee, and that's the exact same case that the Mishnah we just saw told us it pays full damage, right, as it is on the board. And it says, Ketzad, how so? So it gives you Nagach, Nashach, Ravatz, Bat, all those five cases, which is the goring and its four subcategories. The Rishut Rabim.
Half damage.
If it's in Rishut Rabim, it's Mishalem Chatzinezik, half damage. That's the Torah. But Birshut HaNizak, when it happens in Birshut HaNizak, in the domain of the guy who got damaged, that's the case we're discussing. It says, Rabbi Tarfon Omer Nezek Shalem. Rabbi Tarfon says you pay full damage. Vachamim Omrim, whereas the Hachamim say, Chatzi Nezek. So you see there's a machloket. So it's an argument. But we put on the board that in chapter 1, Mishnah 4, goring in the private domain pays full. But now we add to that, that in chapter 2, Mishnah 5, it says, goring in the private domain, well, Rabbi Tarfon
says half,
Rabbi Tarfon says half, and the sages say full.
Right.
There it is.
So, who do we go with?
So, again, thinking about it, it's easy to see both sides of the equation. The Chachamim say...
I don't find a reference to Rabbi Tarfon.
Yeah, well,
Rabbi Tarfon says Nezek Shalem. No, wait a second, missed it up.
Yeah, next. Tarfon says full damages, the sages...
Rabbi Tarfon says full.
And the sages say half.
Full.
Mo, that would be... Four. It would be...
I'm at the wrong spot. Okay, I see it. I didn't turn the page.
Okay, so everyone's with me now?
Yeah.
So let's just think about this.
Rabbi Tarfon.
No, if you turn the page, go to turnover, That's where it deals with the rabbi tarfon.
Right.
So, if you think about it, Rabbi Tarfon says, pay full. Mm-hmm. Goring is unexpected. You don't have to watch out for it. The Torah says if it happens in the public domain, you only have to pay half. But if your ox goes into someone else's property, then immediately, says Rabbi Tarfon, you have full responsibility because you were negligent in letting him wander around. Whatever he does there, whatever type of damage, has to pay. Full damage. But the Hachamim say no. Wait a second. In Reshut the Rabim, in the public domain, if the ox gores, it only has to pay half. Why? Because you're not expected to look out for such things. They're unexpected. If your ox makes it into someone else's property and doesn't do any damage there, just walks around, do you have to pay anything? No. Just walks in and walks out, you don't have to pay anything. Mm-hmm. So that means that letting the ox wander into someone else's property in and of itself is not a reason to obligate you to pay anything. It's just the damage it does that obligates you to pay. So if your ox goes in someone else's property, damages their keren, goring, which is unexpected, why should you have to pay whole? Why should you have to pay full damage? The fact that it gets someone's property is not in and of itself a reason to pay. It didn't do any damage. It's just the damage it did. So what type of damage did it do? Goring. What does goring always pay? Half. So why should you pay full? So we have this argument, and it's not clear what the law is going to be. In the Mishnah that we learned at the end of chapter 1, it told us, like Rabbi Tarfon, it said it's considered mu'ad, which is full. So, but it turns out now that what the last Mishnah of the first chapter told us without dispute, full, today's Mishnah says, you know what? It's really more complicated than that. What we gave you earlier was only one opinion, the minority opinion, whereas the majority opinion of the sages is really that only has to pay half.
So does that mean now that there's an argument about the laws of trespass?
It looks like there is a certain argument here. How serious is trespassing? Mm-hmm. According to the sages, trespassing is really not that serious. It's no big deal.
When we talk about the sages in comparison to the rabbis, are we talking contemporary compared to the sages?
The sages is another way of saying the majority of the rabbis of the time.
So the sages is the majority.
Yes.
And the rabbi is just one of
the rabbi?
Rabbi.
Rabbi Tarfon is the one particular rabbi that didn't agree with the majority opinion here.
Okay, because when I think of... All right. I'm just going to keep it simple.
And it's not that
complicated.
And indeed, I think we've talked about this in the past.
Right.
That it could very well be that in ancient times, in general, property was much less marked out as private than we have today. Just think of the wild, wild west of Texas. Mm-hmm. Property lines might not be at all clear-cut, and if they're clear-cut, they're not marked some places.
The old fight between the farmers and the cowmen.
The sheep herders and the cattle.
Yeah, the sheep and the cattle herder. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who didn't want fences, and the farmers who insisted on fences.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the basic framework. Let's read on now. Reading on. So we're back in our Mishnah, chapter 2, Mishnah 5. And it says, Amar Lehem Rabbi Tarfon. Let's make sure we have the place.
I don't.
It's third line down.
Thank you.
Said to them, Rabbi Tarfon, and it's in the plural, said to them, Rabbi Tarfon is talking to the majority of the sages, and there's Rabbi Tarfon on the board, he says, Phil Nezik, and he wants to convince the sages that he's right. So he says the following, Uma bimkom shehekel al hashen ve'al haregel birshut harabim shupatur. Hichmir alehem birshut anizak l'shalem nezek shalem. Makom shichmir al hakeren birshut rabim l'shalem chatzin nezek.
Eino din shenachmir aleha birshut anizak l'shalem nezek shalem. And although you didn't understand the word I said just now, I did it for the intonation. In other words, it is what we call an all the more so argument, a fortiori. Kal v'chomer. Kal v'chomer. And it's one of the classic moves of logic. I'll put it on the board, right? Kal v'chomer. In Hebrew, kal v'chomer, all the more so.
So that's taking it from the specific to the general.
Taking it from the specific. No.
If it's true here, in this one case, then obviously it's got to pertain to that whole category.
No, not exactly, Mo.
Oh, okay.
If it's, I'll give you an example of a kal v'chomer. I notice that whenever it's drizzling out, you take your umbrella, all the more so will you take the umbrella out when it's raining cats and dogs. That's kal v'chomer. If I assume that there's more reason to take an umbrella with you when it's raining hard than when it's raining lightly, then if you take an umbrella when it's raining lightly, all the more so will you take an umbrella when it's raining hard. It's not from the specific to the general. Okay? And there's lots of different variations of kal v'chomer, of all the more so logic of a fortiori. By the way, the kal v'chomer argument is one of the 13 principles of Rabbi Yishmael concerning the exegesis of the Torah. If we have a braita at the beginning of the Sifra, which is the rabbinic midrash, halachic rabbinic midrash in the book of Leviticus, and the braita lists the 13 principles of Torah interpretation, kal v'chomer is the first principle. And in many customs, we say this braita every morning before the morning service. I don't know if you say it here or not.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so you say this every morning. Probably very quickly, you can hardly notice it.
No, Rabbi Shmuel Omer.
Yeah,
that's right. Well,
so it's right. Actually, if I get a sidur, I could find it.
This is Rosh Hashanah.
We don't find
it. We don't have a sidur
right
here.
Okay.
It's. You believe me, or I believe you that it's there.
So I don't know. It's just before the Kaddish.
Yeah. So what you're saying here. So what you're saying here with goring. The argument here is in the category of goring. That's what we're talking about.
We're talking only about goring.
Only talking about goring, where there is one body of thought that says if it is done in the public domain, only half damages ought to be paid. This is the question to be raised.
In the public domain, everyone knows it's only half.
That's right.
Right now, we're looking at the private.
But in the private, he says we ought to deal more rigorously with it.
Right.
Okay.
And let's work out the kal v'chomer logically. So let's just think. It's actually not hard at all. We know the following facts that you can't deny. We know that in the public domain, goring pays half, right? That we all know. And we also know the following, I hope we remember, that in the public domain as well, tooth and foot pays how much? Shein and regel pays how much in the public domain? Nothing. Very good.
Well, they're exempt, yeah.
Pays nothing. Okay, then in the private domain, tooth and foot, shein and regel, pays how much in the private domain?
Full.
So what did we just establish? We just established that the private domain is more severe than the public domain. How do I know that? Because in the public domain, shein and regel pays nothing, whereas it pays full in the private. So you see, the private domain is more severe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's clear, mm-hmm. right? Because if your animal gets into someone else's domain, it's more serious. So the private domain is more serious. And therefore, the kal v'chomer goes as follows. Being that we've established that the private domain is more severe, and you have to pay there more than in the public domain, right? Therefore, goring, which has to pay in the public domain half,
of course it'll have to pay more in the private domain. That's the Kal Vachomer. It's just go over it in your mind for a minute. It's not complicated.
So it's a logical...
It's a logical move.
Yeah.
Now, where was it previously established that biting and kicking pay full cost?
In the private, in the Torah. Right? The Torah says if your animal goes and grazes in someone else's field, it has to pay full. And that's only if it's someone else's field. If it's in the public domain, it doesn't have to pay anything.
Okay, so that's already established.
Already established.
So no, let me make fun. In my logic, if you're doing the goring in the public domain, it could be much more dangerous and damaging because you have a lot more people involved in public thing. So it should be equally or at least full payment.
But we're not looking at potential damage. We're looking at damage already done. How much do you have to pay for the specific damage done?
Well, if you don't control your animals, I mean,
but if it's done already, it's not a matter of other damage that could occur. This particular damage that was done, how much do you have to pay for it?
We're talking about the individual incident, not a general category.
Okay.
Right, so let's just say the Kal Vachomer again. Given that we've established that Shein and Regel, which doesn't have to pay anything in the public domain, has to pay full in the private domain, all the more so Karen, that has to pay half in the public domain, should pay more in the full domain, in the private domain.
So it's already established that Goring has a penalty in the public domain.
Right, exactly, right. Shane and Regal have no penalty in the public domain, and they have to pay full in the private. So Karen, that already has a penalty in the public domain, all the more so should have to pay full in the private domain. That's the Kal Vachomer of Rabbi Tarfon. It really makes full sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, Karen, it means horn, and goring, are they using them interchangeably?
Yes. Yep, yep. And when we say, of course, goring, we mean all of its children, pushing, biting, lying down, and kicking. All the children of Goring. I mean, see Goring have children? So Mo's point was very good. I'll just say it once again, right?
But just a minute.
No problem.
Goring is...
We're here for you. Is there no one else there who's pushing us to go forward?
I mean, when you say Goring, I mean, if it's Goring, there's Goring, there's Karen Tom and Karen Moab.
We're talking about Tom. We're talking about the normal animal, not one that's forewarned because it happened three times.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do you know that if you don't say Karen Tom?
Because that is the classic baseline case of goring. Okay. Most oxen don't gore.
Okay.
We perhaps as modern people have this image that oxen are always goring. But it's not so. It's a very, very rare, out of the ordinary case. It doesn't usually happen.
I've never seen an ox, actually, I don't think. I mean, I've seen every cattle. I mean, I've seen bulls and all other kind of cattle, but I can't remember seeing an ox.
It could be that I've never seen one either.
In case you do.
In case you do, no, that usually doesn't gore.
Okay, it's good to know.
So, just to say it once again, to make sure it penetrates deep into our consciousness. Shein and Regel have to pay nothing in the public domain, but still they have to pay full in the private domain. Therefore, Karen, that already is penalized in the public domain to pay half, all the more so should it pay full in the private domain. That's Rabbi Tarfon, and his argument is so logical, you wonder how anyone could disagree. How could the sages say no?
With a bunch of Jews around, it's easier.
So let's read on in the Mishnah and see how the Chachamim react to Rabbi Tarfon. And we'll read where we left off. So look in the text and find where it says, Amrulo, they said to him. They said to him.
they reply to him?
That's the place they replied to him?
Okay, I'm almost
yeah,
there.
I see, okay.
And there in the English, they replied to him. Love here's it. The English.
Okay, they replied to him. And what they say to him in Hebrew is, Dayo leba min hadin liot kanidon.
Oh, okay.
Which means, it's enough for the conclusion to be like the postulate, but they probably have a different translation.
They replied to him, it is sufficient for the inferred law to be as stringent as the premise.
Right. It's say it again in English. It's
they replied to him, it is sufficient for the inferred law to be as stringent as the premise if...
Yeah, then we can stop there. Okay. So what they say to every Tarfon is, you misused this logical principle. And what they're saying is not something they're making up here. It's an established restriction on the use of Kal Vachomer, an established restriction on the use of all the more so arguments. And the restriction basically says as follows. Again, it's a logical principle. The restriction basically says that you can't learn more about X with the Kal Vachomer than you already know about it.
So in other words, they're saying if it already says half damages,
you can't go above half damages.
You can't increase it.
Let me give you an example. I'll go back to my umbrella example and the raining. What did I say earlier? I said as follows. I've noticed you always go out with an umbrella when it's drizzling. All the more so will you go out with an umbrella when it's raining cats and dogs. That was my Kal Vachomer. Now notice how that Kal Vachomer worked. It said, I noticed that you use an umbrella when it's drizzling. Therefore, all the more so should use an umbrella when it's raining. My premise was use an umbrella. My conclusion was use an umbrella. What if I, and that's a good Kal Vachomer, what if I said the following? I notice you got with an umbrella when it's drizzling, therefore you should certainly go out with two umbrellas when it's raining. That's a good Kal Vachomer, because you would think it's a good Kal Vachomer, because if you use an umbrella when it's drizzling, you'll need two when it's raining hard. But that you can't do. You can never use a Kal Vachomer to go beyond your original principle. A Kal Vachomer can only apply the principle in a new case, but can't go beyond it. Another example. I see that for a glass of orange juice, you're willing to pay a dollar. All the more so for two glasses, should you be willing to pay how much? You might say $2. That's a misuse of a Kal Vachomer. All you can say is, I'm sure you'll be able to pay $1 for two glasses. You can never go beyond the original premise. You hear what I'm saying? But you hear it, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, say the rabbis, Rabbi Tarfon, you misused the logic. Because what was the logic? Let's say it again. The logic was the following. In the public domain, Shein and Regel pay nothing, whereas they pay full in the private. Therefore, Karen, that already pays half in the public domain, should pay full in the private. Say the rabbis, no, you misused it. All you can prove is
they pay half.
That's all you can prove.
Well, but
you can't prove more than that.
The interesting thing is, and they're willing to accept. They do accept, right? Because the Torah says so. They do accept the payment in full in kicking and biting in the private domain.
The sages? No.
The sages, yeah.
They,
because it's a Torah. It's a,
you mean Shein and Regel?
Shein and Regel, yeah.
Yeah. Mo is right. The Kal Vachomer in our Mishnah is not exactly like the Kal Vachomer of the raining.
Right. So they say this case doesn't apply to that case.
They say categorically, you cannot prove anything that goes beyond your original premise.
Right.
And since the original premise was that Karen pays half in the public, you can't go beyond that. No, you can prove it applies in different cases. You can't go beyond
The fact is that the Torah doesn't say anything about goring in the private domain.
Right, it doesn't. And we have to figure out what it should be.
Yeah.
So we're all on the same page?
I go with the talk phone. I guess you're pretty full.
But what are we going to do with the sage's argument? You can't go beyond...
Well,
your conclusion can't go beyond your premise.
Well, that sounds like a clever defense attorney.
Right.
But you hear, like what I said, the orange juice case.
Yeah.
Would you accept this kal vachomer? I see you're willing to pay $1 for a glass of orange juice. Therefore, you should be willing to pay $2 for two glasses.
I see nothing wrong with that logic. I see absolutely nothing wrong.
Perhaps I have a principle that I only spend $1 for breakfast.
But
now suddenly you're telling me you spent $2 for breakfast?
No.
Good morning.
No. If you are trying to be logical, you are not saying that you have to buy two glasses of orange juice. You are saying if you wanted to buy a second glass of orange juice, you would know you would pay
more. Okay, then it's a mistake. That's a little detail in my example.
Well,
go back to my my argument with the umbrella. If I see you always take an umbrella when it's drizzling, then when the meteorologists say that it's double drizzling, it's raining cats and dogs, you should take two umbrellas. Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
Because you can't go beyond the original premise. That's what the Hakamim are saying. You can't exceed the original premise.
So it's a different kind of a case. Then,
yeah, but
like
there,
it really, you're right.
It's a different kind of a case.
It's a different kind of a case. And considering at the time that the sages lived, this might be very logical. But
okay.
It ain't logical now.
No, but it's part of the rule.
Well, the logic is...
I know, it's part of, it's part of the rule.
The part of the rule.
So let's just say it's the rule, and let's go on and to...
This rule is proven in the Torah.
Okay.
The rule that said you can't extend beyond your original premise in a kal vachomer. And the proof is in chapter 12 of the book of Numbers. Chapter 12 of the book of Numbers, the story in which Aaron and Miriam spoke the Lashon Hara against
chapter 12.
Moshe.
Well, see, my logic is goes to the fact that anything that's done in the private domain, that should be more serious.
Chapter 12. And here we go. What chapter 12, verse what?
Chapter.
What book are we in?
We're in Numbers.
I'm in Numbers 12, yeah. Chapter what?
What page is it on?
Well, Numbers, I'm on page 835. But
835.
That's the end of the chapter.
And that's very good. So the story was, as you remember, that Miriam and Aaron spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe. And Moshe was the humblest man that ever lived. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets involved and defends Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the story, it says in verse 10, which is page 834, chapter 12, verse 10. As the cloud withdrew from the tent, there was Miriam stricken with snow-white scales. In other words, she was punished for her Lashon Hara. When Aaron turned toward Miriam, he saw that she was stricken with scales. And Aaron said to Moshe, O my Lord, account not to us the sin which we committed in our folly. Let her not be as one dead, who emerges from his mother's womb with half his flesh eaten away. So Moshe cried out to the Lord, saying, O God, pray heal her. But the Lord said to Moshe, if her father spat in her face, would she not bear her shame for 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp for 14 days, and then let her be...
Seven days.
I did it on purpose. It's a kal vachomer, right? God makes a kal vachomer. The Lord said to Moshe, I'll read it again, verse 14. If her father spat in her face, would she not bear her shame for 7 days? Therefore,
If God spat in her face, should she not bear her shame for how many days?
7 days.
Only seven, because the Kal Vachomer can't go beyond the original premise. You hear what I'm saying? You might say, look, God is at least double a human being. So if a human being spat in her face, she's embarrassed for 7 days. If God did it, it should be 14 days, if not 21. No.
God sets the rule.
Okay, but stay within the framework, right? So the rabbis say this is God illustrating that a Kal Vachomer can never go beyond its original premise. Just like the example with the orange juice.
No, so what I'm saying is God sets that rule for the Kal Vachomer.
Yes. Okay, that's what you meant. Yeah.
Okay, so right here in the Torah.
So according to rabbinic exegesis...
So I have to go with the sages.
No, but what they're doing is they're inferring that's the rule from this particular...
Yes.
So this is the source.
This is the source for the rule that says, Dayo lavo min hadin liyot kinidan. It's enough for the conclusion to reach the extent of the premise, but not further than the premise.
Yeah. The trouble with the rule... is that it defies our sense of logic.
In this case, it certainly doesn't.
No.
Depends how far you apply the rule.
Right.
And you're right, there's a difference. There's a difference between the orange juice case and the spitting case in the Torah, on the one hand. And on the other hand, our case. Because as Mo pointed out, in our case, although it's true we don't have a case of goring that goes beyond half, we do have the cases of shame and regular that go beyond half.
In the prophet.
It's a different type of Kal Vachomer, Rabbi Tarfon would argue.
Yeah.
But the sages say, no, we have the hard and fast rule that you can't go beyond the premise when you reach the conclusion.
So Bruce, that's Scalia and Elihudah argument.
Please enlighten us.
They're
the two real fundamentalists on the Supreme Court.
What is the
original intent?
The original intent.
Of the founding fathers.
Okay, so let's just sum up for Miranda. So we're discussing the question of goring in the private domain when your ox gets into someone else's property. And the Torah says that oxen goring in the public domain have to pay half, and we're debating what is in the private domain. And there's an argument among the sages. Rabbi Tarfon says that the goring ox in the private domain pays full, whereas the sages say half. So if you want, right, we have another 10 minutes, we can discuss how Rabbi Tarfon comes back and responds to the sages' argument that you can't go beyond the premise in the conclusion of the older Morso argument. Do you have strength to see Rabbi Tarfon's response?
Absolutely.
It's quite complicated.
Oh, you're going to miss this.
Okay. So, the response of Rabbi Tarfon is actually not in the Mishnah, it's in the Gemara. It's not in the Mishnah, it's in the Gemara. So we're going to put the Mishnah aside and go to the Gemara. And what I did is I actually brought a translation of the Gemara into English. This is for Miranda. At the bottom of the page there. This is the Babylonian Talmud Tractate Bava Kamma, page 25a. And it goes like this. Does Rabbi Tarfon really ignore the principle of Dayo? Dayo is what we just said. That it's enough for the conclusion to reach the extent of the premise, but no further. And Rabbi Tarfon seems to be ignoring that by saying he has to pay full damage in the private domain. Does Rabbi Tarfon really ignore the principle of Dayo? Is not Dayo of biblical origin as taught? How does the rule of Kal Vachomer work? And the Lord said to Moshe, if her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? How much the more so in the case of divine reproof should she be ashamed 14 days? But it doesn't say 14, it only says 7. You see the principle of Dayo? Yet the number of 7 days remain, for it's sufficient if the law in respect of the thing inferred be equivalent to that which it is derived. Right, that's our principle of the Dayo.
So you see, it's a biblical principle. How could Rabbi Tarfon contradict it? The answer is, the principle of Dayo is ignored by Rabbi Tarfon only when it would defeat the purpose of the a fortiori. That's the Latin for all the more so. But where it does not defeat the purpose of the a fortiori, even he maintains the principle of Dayo. What that means is that Rabbi Tarfon accepts the principle of Dayo, but only in certain cases, and not in our case. And then explains how our case is different than other cases. So of course he has to accept the principle of Dayo, the principle that limits the applicability of all the more so reasoning. He has to accept the limitation because the Torah gives it to us, but he says that's only in a certain case and not in other cases. And then we have to understand the distinction he makes between our case and other cases where the limitation principle applies. So he says as follows. Where does the limitation case apply? In the case of the Torah. What's going on there? Again, we said if her father spat in her face, she should be embarrassed 7 days. All the more so if God spat in her face, should be embarrassed at least 7 days. We can't say 14 days. That's going beyond our premise. So we say 14. We say 7 days. And when we say that, the reason, according to Rabbi Tarfon, is because saying Dayo, limiting the conclusion to not go beyond the premise, still allows us to use the Kal Vachomer. Still allows it to use. We learn from the Kal Vachomer that when God spits in our face, at least she should be embarrassed 7 days. Without the Kal Vachomer, we wouldn't know anything about what to do when God spits in our face. So we use the Kal Vachomer to go far, but only as far as the original premise. But says Rabbi Tarfon, if this matter of Dayo, of limiting the conclusion to the extent of the premise, would prevent us from using the Kal Vachomer at all, would be nothing to learn from it, then we don't apply the rule that says Dayo. That's what he says. And therefore he says, in our case, in the Mishnah, if you use Dayo, the rule that limits the Kal Vachomer, you're effectively destroying any use of the Kal Vachomer, and therefore we don't apply it. Why would you be destroying it? Because you don't need a Kal Vachomer to teach you that Karen pays half in the private domain. That's already given, he says. No one ever pays less than half for Karen. So if you use Dayo, you're effectively saying no Kal Vachomer here. And Dayo wasn't meant to do that. It was only meant to limit a Kal Vachomer, but not to destroy it completely. If it destroys it, you don't apply the principle. Take a few seconds to think about it. Just think about it in your minds, and if you have any questions, ask me. I'm going to also think about it myself. You can also read the English further on in the Talmud. It says exactly the same thing.
Anyone want to?
I think I'm back to Tarfon. I think they should pay full. I mean, Shane and Regal, why do you go with that, with the fact that they're exempt in public and have to pay full in private, right? If Shane and Regal are exempt in public, they're full in private. I mean, Goring, I don't know why that's different. Seems like that, of course, that's more aggressive, I guess. Or no, they're not forewarned. But the Goring pays half in public.
Which means it's more severe than Shane and Regal, because they don't pay anything.
Right.
And therefore, in the...
But they pay full in private.
And therefore, all the more so that Goring should pay full in private. That's Rabbi Tarfon.
But it hurts just as much whether you're in private or public when you gore.
Yeah, but the question is the degree of responsibility of the owner.
Well, the owner should still watch their herd, wherever it may be.
Yeah, but to what degree is he responsible, full or only half?
I think full personally.
So, but, right, the point is not to take a personal stance on what makes more sense, at least from my point of view. The point is to try and understand the logic of both parties here.
So, Goring is more severe, they seem to imply here, in the public at least.
Rabbi Tarfon, right, takes that position.
Well, everybody, as far as... Everybody okay. says that okay. the public pays half mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. Goring pays half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that seems to imply that that's more severe than mm-hmm. Shane and Regal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's exempt in the public.
But in turn, the sages say we are going to strictly interpret. Since it's here
in the book of Numbers.
In the book of Numbers. And from a way of pedagogy, I understand how you got us here. It probably would have been an easier struggle for us if we had, at the beginning, had the benefit of the
Talmudic passage. We got to the Talmudic passage without the passage.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so we've come to our conclusion, right? Mm-hmm. We see both sides of the picture, but the halakha is like the sages, they're the majority, that Goring only pays half even in the private domain. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I... Caroline.
Yeah, sorry. I guess I have to go with the phone.